It's Andrew Booth Day here on the Locked On Vikings podcast. Let's get into them.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun, and you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings, and thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day, each and every day. We're kind of just moving down this draft class, going in depth and watching tape. It's a fun time. We're doing Andrew Booth today, so that means we're going to talk about his tape, his consistencies, his inconsistencies. There's also maturity and medical stuff that we're going to go over. There's a lot. He's a complicated prospect that I think fell for reasons that didn't have a lot to do with on the field. And I don't know how legit those reasons are. We'll talk about them, but I do want to start on the field. A real quick note before we go into that, Lewis Seen signed his rookie deal. It's fully guaranteed, which is not a thing that usually pick number 32 gets. The NFLPA has been pushing for a long time for the entire first round to get fully guaranteed rookie contracts. Usually it was only like the top 20-ish, 22, something like that. And it seems like the NFLPA has won that fight. And now all George Karlaftis, who was 30, also got a fully guaranteed deal, which is not very precedented. So it'd be interesting stuff if you really want to get into the, like, what the cap should be and stuff and all of the little nitty gritty details of tracking every dime. But if you want to know more about Seen himself, go listen to Monday's episode. We're talking about Andrew Booth today. So here's what I want to start with. And it's Booth's footwork. So when I talked about him pre-draft, I had him as my fifth corner. I had him as a borderline first rounder, and I kind of wasn't sure if I had him in the first or the second. So getting a mid-second, great value to me. I'm happy with the pick. And I think I pretty much still am there. So I want to get really deep into technique with corner technique and stuff with Booth, because I think he's got really good footwork. And that's like the headline with him is when he's doing like a rehearsed technique, like a feather step or like a side shuffle, or when he's doing like press bail, things that you drill, he's really, really, really consistent at them. And you'll win a lot of reps that way. I do have some nitpicks about that, though. Whenever he's in a press alignment, he has a little bit of a false step. And that might just be a tempo thing that some corners like to have that, especially when they're doing what's called a feather technique. And if you don't know what a feather technique is, that's where you're sort of hesitant on purpose. You delay your back pedal on purpose. And usually you're doing that because you're responsible for flat routes, for like swing passes and stuff. As the outside corner, you don't want to get too deep because then you just have to like go chase it down again. And you don't want to give it too much room, so you sort of hesitate. That little false step wastes time, and you're wasting that time on purpose because of just the timing of your coverages. So that could be part of it, but he also does that on reps where he's trying to backpedal or when he's trying to really like get his hips turned and you know, really cover a guy man to man. So I think it's more just a bad habit, but it's a super nitpicky thing, and it's certainly not the thing that I would like try to drill and fix. Really, when he's at his worst, it's because he's very uncontrolled. And he's very wild with his footwork and his steps and stuff. Look, Andrew Booth is a tall, fast corner. If he tested, he would have totally rocketed up the draft board. But he didn't test because of his injuries, which we'll get to. But he's very wild about the way that he steps because he's got a very long stride. I think he's got long striding speed. You know, there's some guys, some 5'9" scat back has very, you know, short choppy steps, and that's kind of how they're fast, is that they take a lot of little steps. And then you've got the Randy Moss speed, right? That's the long kind of gazelle striding where they can cover 15 yards in three steps, and that's how they're fast. And Andrew Booth has that kind of long tall guy speed. But what that means is that his steps are always going to be really, really committal. What I would want to do with him is I would want to make all of his footwork when he's in transition, when he's in phase, when he's in, you know, when he's getting off the line, I think he's really good and that's rehearsed. When he's actually in the middle of the rep, some of the reps that he loses because he took too big of a step, or because he just, there's a lot of wasted motion in his footwork when he's trying to change direction and be explosive. So I want to chop up his footwork a little bit. I want him to take smaller steps. Even if that means sacrificing a little bit of his raw speed, I think he'd win more reps that way on the whole. I think it'd be worth it. And to be more specific about this, like, he commits really hard to every little signal that he sees. And that's a really good thing. Like, nothing gets by him. But it does mean that a more deceptive route runner than what he saw in college, which he did not draw the best receivers in college, even on teams that had good receivers, he kind of tended to draw the other guy. NFL receivers are going to do a better job of being deceptive, and they might really be able to kind of trick him and get him caught. But he responds really, really aggressively and decisively to everything. And because every step he takes is really big and long, it means he can work, he can get into position and out of position really, really, really fast. So there's a lot of these sequences where he takes like one big long step the wrong way, and then back and undoes it with another big long step, and then realizes he was actually right, so he redoes it, and it's all this wasted motion and all this wasted time. And that, when he loses a rep, that's usually what I see. And then sometimes, with all that moving around and all that wild footwork, he'll just lose his balance. And he'll either have to regain it, and he'll lose speed that way, or there are a bunch of times where he just falls over. In particular, his game against NC State, which is universally agreed upon it to be the bad game, there was a lot of losing his balance and slipping around. I like legit wonder if maybe he didn't have the right cleats for that field or something, because he fell over a ton, and I didn't see that a lot in the other games that I watched. So I might be overreacting to the NC State game with this, but at any rate, I want to see him chop it up a little bit smoother. I don't want to take away the aggression, because what's really, really cool about him is when he is coming downhill, when he is feathering and trying to, you know, attack a swing pass or something like that, he's really, really good at it. He's, for whatever it's worth, he's a good force player. When he needs to be in run support, he knows how to, you know, get onto the edge and stop the running back from bouncing outside. And if that means he's taking on a block, he's going to get killed by an O-lineman because he's a corner, but he'll at least get killed on the right shoulder, so the running back still has to cut the ball back. And that's what you want out of a corner in run support. And he's really, really willing to take on contact, which I'll get to that in more detail in a second, which is insane because he was basically playing through pain since he was a kid. He's been playing through pain. He's been always playing through pain. And you wouldn't be able to tell. He's really, really willing to take on contact, and you can just tell how tough the kid is. And that's, I really, really admire that. In general, I think what will make him a good corner eventually is that he's got a lot of steps and techniques that he very clearly has already worked on and honed, and they're ready to go. And then he also has really, really good ball skills. When the ball is coming his way, he's really good at getting a hand on it, getting interceptions. Go watch his highlight film on YouTube. You'll see all these crazy circus catches. He looks like Odell Beckham. That shows up consistently. He's really good at that. So that's also very exciting. I like the technique and the way that he plays generally. I just want him to rein it in just a little bit and get his lower body under control a little bit better. And in particular, that false step. Because what that false step can do, to circle back to that, is if he steps forward, his weight won't go forward, and he'll sort of lean back into it, and then he'll start his back pedal that way. Kind of gets his momentum going by leaning back a little bit. But then his weight is behind his feet, and that makes it really difficult to get your hips turned in time, and sometimes that can affect his hip turn, and it also makes it really difficult to go charge forward if it's a slant or a quick breaking route, or if he has to, or if he is trying to feather, it can get in the way of that. So I do want to get that out. I want to chop up his feet a little bit and just get him under control a little bit. But what really I think the narrative around him was always, look, he's a good corner, but, and so that's what good corner means. He's got the right techniques. He comes with a lot of tools in his toolbox already, good ball skills and all that, and the right kind of aggressive mentality. But there was that one time he got in a fight in a Louisville game and they didn't let him on the plane. There's the injuries. We got to talk about all that, and we will do so. But first, let me talk to you about your car. Take care of that sucker, because if you let a small problem become a big problem, that means letting a small expense become a big expense. And I'm here to try to help you save money. And you can save money on that small expense by going to rockauto.com. You can get, if you're like a total DIY gearhead type, you can get just about anything under the sun at rockauto.com. Just enter your car's make, year, and model, and you can browse their catalog for all sorts of brands and stuff. They'll sort out for you, like, what's compatible with your car, and you'll be good to go. You can also get, like, just everyday supplies, like motor oil or stuff that you should just have in your car, like a tire kit or jumper cables, whatever it is that you buy at rockauto.com. Make sure you let them know in the How You Heard About Us section that Locked On sent you. Because if you don't, the rabbits will refuse to show up to their Hague trial. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Thanks so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day every single day. Let me talk about Andrew Booth's injury history, which is probably the key reason that he fell. He is a better cornerback than the kind of cornerback you would expect to get at pick 42. The injury history is the problem. So in short, I would categorize Booth's injury history into two kind of main episodes. The stuff with his knee, and there's lots of stuff, and the stuff with his core, which is what he's going through now. So let's start with the stuff with his knee, and it starts all the way back when he was a kid. So when Andrew Booth was going through puberty, he had a condition called Osgood-Schlatter's disease, which you don't need to remember. What you need to know is that's a growth spurt problem. When you're a kid and you're not as tall as you're going to be as an adult, you have growth plates as part of like your leg bones, which is cartilage, and that's where the growth is actually going to happen. It's more malleable, right? When you hit a growth spurt, if you were going to grow a lot, things don't, they're not perfectly in sync, all right? Mother Nature didn't do this exactly on the same, not everybody started on the starting gun. Your muscles, your tendons, your bones, your cartilage, and all that stuff will grow at different paces at different times. And with Osgood-Schlatter, your muscles and growth plates and bones and stuff grow, and your tendon is the one that's behind. And so that means that the leg is going to grow and it's going to stretch that tendon even though it isn't grown yet and it's not ready to take that stress, and therefore we have pain. That is a pretty painful condition. It is a lot more common in kids that play a lot of sports, and it's what Andrew Booth suffered from. When you have it, you're supposed to like take it easy, and you can still play sports, but you know, take yourself out of the game. If you start to feel too much discomfort, you can do more damage that way. Knowing Andrew Booth, I don't think he took himself out of many games. I'm going to go ahead and venture a guess, because he's kind of, he's a little too competitive for that, as any player that gets to the NFL kind of has to have that mentality, right? After you're done with puberty and all your growth spurts are done, the Osgood-Schlatter pretty much goes away. You're pretty much done with all that pain and stuff. You can have some lasting side effects. Some patients will get like a bone growth in the back of their knee that doesn't cause any pain, but is weird and is there. And it actually sounds like he does have that, which I find really interesting, like medically, but like in a super nerdy way. But really the pain goes away once everything is, you know, once the tendon catches up and all that, like the condition goes away. But if you put it through too much stress in the meantime, you'll get tendonitis. And it seems like that's what happened. So the condition went away for Andrew Booth, and then later he developed knee tendonitis, specifically patellar tendonitis. Your patella is like your kneecap, the cartilage that holds everything together. And for Booth, tendonitis is just like a series of micro tears, just a lot of damage over time. And that eventually turns into inflammation and a lot of pain. And it's kind of the same thing Anthony Barr has been dealing with, just a lot of like wear and tear over time. And eventually, because he didn't get it like treated right and he kept playing football and all that stuff, it turned into an actual tear of the patella. And that turned into a knee problem that he actually had to have surgery to overcome. So with all those problems, the timeline's really important here, because with patellar issues in particular, the year or two after, you will experience, usually patients experience some sort of decline in performance. They'll get a little slower. Their leg won't work quite as well in the year or two after. With Booth, he had this procedure after the 2019 season. So it's been that year or two. And he had a really good 2021 season. So I think whatever performance effect that this injury has, is supposedly behind him. Now, once you've had knee surgery, you're just going to be that much more susceptible to more knee problems once things have been surgically repaired and all that stuff. You know, scar tissue doesn't grow in the same way as muscle tissue. Like, it's not aligned as well as, like, muscle fibers are. So it's just going to be a little harder. That was incredibly painful. He said once in a game in 2019 that he didn't feel like his knee was ever over, like, 80%, and he claims to be a lot healthier now. And he still was playing through that pain and playing at a high level. So it's, like, pretty easy to not worry about it. You just have to worry about it re-aggravating or, you know, something else happening. So then that takes us to the core issue. So when he was training for the combine this February, he started experiencing pain in his quad, like a quad strain. And that sort of slowed him down, but he was just going to kind of compete through it. And then he had to have core surgery for a sports hernia. It is not impossible that that's the same injury and the hernia just presents as pain in your quad. All those muscles in your core and your groin and your leg and all that stuff, that, like, upper leg, all of those muscles are connected. And so a tear in one place can kind of show up as pain in another place. So it's possible, and it's possible that those are just two unrelated injuries, but the quad strain was just, like, a minor thing that also happened that is going to be long gone by the time he actually has to play football. But he had to have hernia surgery. Nobody else has said this, but Dane Brugler does verify all that information with, like, inside the NFL sources. So either way, single or double hernia, that's surgery, and that is going to essentially push right up to, the recovery for that pushes right up to the start of camp. It's the same surgery that Christian Darrisaw had last year, but before you panic, Christian Darrisaw did not recover from his core surgery, groin surgery, on the normal timeline. Something went wrong with his recovery. We're not really sure what it is, but they had to have an additional cleanup surgery. So he had to miss up to 6 weeks of the season, and that was kind of why the start of his rookie season was delayed. That doesn't happen to everybody. That was, like, a specific thing to Christian Darrisaw. So unless it's the same thing, unless Andrew Booth is exactly as unlucky, he should be ready to go by the start of camp. The estimate is, like, maybe he'd be ready for mandatory minicamp, but I wouldn't expect him on the field for OTAs, which are starting up really quick. He probably will still be rehabbing there then, and we probably won't see him on the field till the summer. Those sorts of core issues, once you get them repaired surgically, as long as the recovery is on the right timeline, once you've recovered, it's pretty much behind you. Those do not have a very high rate of re-injury. So basically he just has had some surgeries on his knee, and that's the extent of the medical issues. But it's, like, it's such a long list of stuff that it's going to drop him, and it's, you know, you go, is he injury prone and all that stuff? Is his knee actually okay? But it seems like it had a lot more to do with the way that he hit puberty, you know, years ago, and the way that kind of aggravated over time with the procedures that he had. None of them are like the back injuries that Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter have, where they can sort of re-aggravate at any time. They're all theoretically behind him now. And it's just a matter of, you know, can he not sustain further injuries with his frame and his play style, which is very, very, very physical. And that physicality is the next thing that I want to talk to you about. And it kind of goes hand in hand with his mentality, and some people would say his maturity. I don't necessarily agree. But first things first, let me talk to you about a good old gamble. Did you know that there's been a lot of action on betting the Vikings to win the NFC Championship, which is a wild, they're plus 1800. The odds are not high, but apparently a lot of people like those odds, which I go for it, I guess. If you want to go for it, go to betonline.net. I will not be joining you. I think I emotional hedge. I bet on the Packers to do it. Sorry, everybody. I just couldn't, that 6-1. If the Packers do go to the Super Bowl, the 6-1 will help the medicine go down a little bit. All right. If you want to bet on anything, you can also bet on hockey playoffs. The Wild are hanging on by the skin of their teeth right now. So, you know, if you want to go gamble on that game, or if you want to gamble on basketball, men's playoff going on, women's season just kicked off, you can bet on whatever there. You can even play your favorite Vegas casino games. Head on over to betonline.net. Get yourself a gambling. Bet online, where the game starts. So with Andrew Booth, the last thing I want to talk to you about is probably my favorite thing about him. And it's definitely going to make me overrate him. And I think I'm just okay with that because I love this more than it is a good thing. Like, it's a fine thing, but I love how physical he is. It is awesome when he has to, like, defeat a block on a bubble screen or something. He'll just blow up the receiver. And he blows up the receiver across from him a lot, including times where he absolutely does not have to. There are a lot of instances on his tape where he's on the other side of the play, you know, the ball gets thrown to the other side or to run play or something, and either there's no way a ref's looking at you because you're so far away from the play, or it's a run play and it's fair game. He'll just blow up the receiver. He just wants to hit you. And I think you'd have to ask Booth himself about this, but if I had to guess, I would think this is a purposeful mind game. I think this is, I want to beat you up and make you feel beat up. And, you know, when you're a corner, you're going to go up against the same guy a lot, especially in college. A lot of colleges chose matchups. And I think the other Clemson corner was struggling or something. They had something else going on that defense where they would often take their best receivers and match them up away from Andrew Booth. So Booth would get the same guy all day, and it would be a guy who knew he was way better than. And he just wanted to beat that guy up. The Wake Forest game that he played, which I think is his magnum opus, it's definitely like my favorite tape of his. He was in this dude's head. It was horrible. Like, he was blowing this guy up all the time. He was just, sometimes it's just a little love tap, just a little shove after the play. It's just enough not to draw a flag, but enough to make the guy a little mad and get in his head a little bit. It's very like big brother, you know, like push your little brother and then be like, dude, stop, when your parents turn around. And it's very instigator like, and I love it. I love that little stinker mentality. It's very like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is so good at this with the Saints. He has drawn so many 15-yard flags by getting the other guy so pissed off he loses his cool. And that physical style also works out, you know, on plays where he has to be physical. He'll take on a block, and you know, he'll take on a wide receiver and blow him up. And there are a lot of times when the guy that was supposed to block Andrew Booth ended up on the ground, and that's pretty cool, and I love to see it. Here's the thing. That physical style doesn't work when you're 15 yards down the field. That is now illegal contact, and there's a lot of instances on his tape of him absolutely committing illegal contact, and the ref just didn't see it, so he didn't get the flag. I don't actually know how penalized he actually was, but that's something that you got to tell him to relax on. Otherwise, he will get automatic first yard or automatic first down flags for illegal contact down the field on pass plays. But what's really cool is you can really tell when it's getting into that receiver's head, and when they're starting to break down, and they're starting to get a little sloppy, and they're starting to maybe get a little bit tilted. My favorite was in that Wake Forest game. He was super in this wide receiver's head. And it was like 34-13 too. Like, Clemson was blowing him out. So you're getting your butt kicked. This dude keeps knocking you over for no reason, and he's playing kind of dirty, and you're really, really mad about it. There's a fade route in the end zone in garbage time. And Andrew Booth positions himself really well to try to go pick it off. And the receiver just rips him down. The clearest OPI I've ever seen in my life. Gets flagged for it and all that stuff. And I don't think he had to. Like, that receiver could have gotten into position on the play, maybe tried to, like, take the ball. But nope, he was way too tilted for that, and he just wanted to knock Andrew Booth over once, and he took the flag for it. And I don't think Booth got flagged once for that in that game. But he drew a flag on him, which is, that's the mind game, right? That's the competitive energy. But that kind of brings me to the Louisville incident, where it was on a punt return in Louisville 2019. He got into a fist fight after the play. Like, he literally was on top of a guy, punched him, super dirty thing, got ejected from the game. And in punishment, Clemson did not let him on the team plane home. He had to take the bus. And it's played as this like really, big, this moment of like self-reflection. And he was like looking out the window, thinking about how he can be a better person, and watching the play. Yeah, he lost his cool for sure. And it was not a cool move. But it later comes out, he was playing through a ton of pain, and that will, and he kind of says like, I didn't feel like myself. I was in so much pain. And he was going through a family thing at the time. His mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, ended up having a double mastectomy. Like, it was a really scary case. He was going through that. There was a lot kind of weighing on him, and it seemed like he just lost his cool after one of these, you know, kind of hot headed, really physical matchups. And so, I mean, he drew the flag, he drew the ejection, totally deserved all that. But in terms of, like, trying to make a character judgment on that, man, I get it. I do. And I like that physical mentality, and I like that he didn't lose it after that. And he didn't get ejected from any other games, but he didn't lose it. And I really, really, really like that. I don't know how good of a trait that is. That physicality is awesome on run plays, but we of course care more about coverage, and it might draw so many penalties that it might not be worth it. But man, I like it. It's fun. It makes his tape fun to watch. It makes him a fun guy to watch, and you know what? That's cool, and I'm gonna take it. So that's more or less my Booth thing. I'm not worried about the medicals. I really like the technique. His physicality and his kind of lack of balance and control are really where I'm worried. But I'm going to be able to tell, I think, in the first week of camp if he's beating Cam Dantzler or not. I don't know right now. But if he comes out and he looks really uncontrolled and he's given up a lot of plays and he's getting pump faked by Kirk Cousins and stuff, Dantzler's winning that job and Booth needs time to incubate. And that's totally fine, right? We're okay with that here on the Locked On Vikings podcast. Some rookies need some time. We don't get impatient. But if he's sticking with Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne and Amir Smith-Marset, if he's winning on those one-on-ones and if he looks really controlled, that's really what I'm looking for, the body control. If he looks really body controlled in camp, look out, because I think then we got a dude. Before I let everybody go, one thing I want to mention, an article came out at Zone Coverage that I wrote and worked really hard on, worked in conjunction with a lot of people on. I got a lot of help on it too, about Ed Ingram and his accusations and the benefit of the doubt, and what do we do when we don't know the details of the case, and we don't know, is he innocent or guilty? The case never went to trial, all that stuff. How do we take that and reconcile it with how heinous the allegations are, and how there is a better than average chance that a sexual abuser plays for the Vikings, and how do we deal with that? I will link it in the show notes. I'm not going to do the thing I usually do with my articles, where I kind of go over them as an episode and kind of make it a discussion here too. If you want to read it, go read it. If you don't want to read it, that's also fine. But I hope you do. I'll link that in the show notes for you. And that'll be that. I'll talk about Ed Ingram on field sometime, maybe next week. He's going to be, I think, the next guy I get to. Maybe even end of this week. But I wanted that piece to come out before I started talking about his pass blocking techniques and stuff. It just would feel weird without having addressed the elephant in the room. So that's it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll probably have some schedule release stuff to talk about tomorrow, and we'll get moving. Schedule gets released today, so we'll probably be able to talk about that and Ed Ingram, and then get to Asamoah and Caleb Evans and all those guys. We'll just keep plugging away through this draft class. I will see you all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.